The rabbis consider the books of the Old Testament to be divided into three groups. There's the law, which are the five books of Moses. Then there are the prophets. And the last grouping is called, in English at any rate, called the writings. And within these writings, there are another subgroup, and these are called the books of wisdom. And these books of wisdom are the book of Job. They're the book of Proverbs. And, of course, the book that we read from this morning, the book of Ecclesiastes. In addition to that, there are three psalms, which are generally considered to be part of the books of wisdom. There's Psalm 37, and that opens with the words, "Fret not thyself because of evildoers." There's Psalm 49, and that opens with the words, "Hear this, ye people, both high and low, rich and poor together." And then there's Psalm 73, and Psalm 73 opens with the words, "Truly, God is good to those that fear him." And the opening verses of these three psalms should give us some idea of what's intended by this concept of wisdom and what these books of wisdom convey. The books of Moses, of course, deal largely with the formation of the nation of Israel, the grand plan which God had for his people. The prophets deal with the history that they belonged in, the history of the time that they spoke from. But the prophets also take us forward to the time when we shall see a rebirth of God's people in this earth, and when we shall see the purpose which God intends for all of us in his kingdom coming to fruition. So the law and the prophets speak of rather grand things. But when you think of the books of wisdom, they talk to us at a very different level. When you open the books of Proverbs, you hear that it's the words of someone who is the son of King David. They're his thoughts. And then when you work your way down through the books of Proverbs, in the first 15 verses, a little phrase, "my son," comes in three times. Turn over to the next chapter and you find again this little phrase, "my son." Turn over again to another chapter and you see the phrase, "hear this, ye children." So you see what the books of wisdom do is speak to each of one of us as individuals. They don't deal with the grand plan which God has for the earth. They deal with us as individuals, and they give us advice that will help us as we work through the daily problems that we encounter. And when you come to the last book of wisdom, the book of Ecclesiastes, and the last few verses, you have the phrase, "fear God." And I want to stop there. We'll talk about the rest of the verse a little later. But again, you can see that it's advice which is given directly and very pointedly to each one of us as individuals. That is the basis of these books of wisdom. So the question that I want us all to think about this morning is that as the, about every 10 years, if you want to sort of frame the situation, about every 10 years we have an economic downturn of some magnitude. And every 50 or 70 years, there was one around the turn of the century. There were two or three in the 1800s, really serious downturns in the economy. There was the Depression, of course, in the 30s. And people are beginning to wonder whether what we're going through at the moment will be equivalent to the Great Depression. So every one of us is wondering, of course, what's going on in the world. And on a greater scale, we can say, well, the hand of God is shaking the nations, and we can look forward to something positive coming out of this. But at a personal level, there are jobs. There's income. There's worry. There are all the things that go along with that. And when we think in terms of the thoughts that are given to us daily from medical sciences and from psychiatry, that indeed this worry, this concern about what may happen to you can have very serious health effects, lead to all sorts of heart problems and so forth, and early death and many things of that nature. It is something that affects each one of us, what's going on in the world. So this morning I want to look at Proverbs and look at Ecclesiastes, and let us keep in our minds at all times that God is with us in all that we do, and hear the advice which comes from these books, and realize that it comes to us at a time when all of us need this sort of advice one way or another. If you look at some of the earlier usages of this word wisdom, and realize that what we're talking about is wisdom literature, one of the first and most significant places where the word turns up is in Exodus. It's in Exodus 31. And it deals with a man who is introduced to us by the name of Bezalel. And we are told that this man was filled with the Spirit of God. He had wisdom. He had understanding. And he had knowledge. And if we stop there in reading and stop again in the middle of the verse, what we must probably think about when we have these words is that this was knowledge that he had. And that he had the ability to frame what he had learned in a positive sense and have some worthwhile outcome from what he had in his head. But if you read the very next two verses in that second verse where I stopped, you'll find that the knowledge that this man had was knowledge with his hands. This was a skill. He was a tradesman or an artisan, as we might say nowadays. And he was very competent in the trade that he was represented. That was wisdom. What he could do with his hands. Now we're sitting in a room which is evidence of that very thing. And there are others sitting in this same room who put a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of skill, a lot of personal interactions, the way they handle people and the way they handle members of the meeting, to bring us all together so that we were able to construct this building. And that's what is talked about here in Exodus. It's the same thing. These were the men that built the items that framed the tabernacle, that portable temple which the Jews took with them through the wilderness and eventually set up in Jerusalem. It was skill with their hands, which was knowledge. Now, there are two rather important things which are added to this. And they come to us, and we'd like to, they're also there in that 31st chapter of Exodus. But I'd like to go to Exodus 35 and 36 to pick up these two additional points. And the first one from the last verse in Exodus 35, it says that God had filled them with wisdom of heart. With wisdom of heart. And if you look again in chapter 31 and work through all of these sections, I'm only reading little sections of it, we have in the King James Version the word wise-hearted. And that's an antique phrase which we really don't use anymore, but it carries a real meaning. It means that the wisdom is not merely the skill and the capability that you have in your hands, but it means that there's also motivation attached to what you do with your hands. They had wisdom in their hearts. They wanted to do things well. That was their job. And there were two other aspects of this which come in the end of the second verse of Exodus 36. Have stirred him to come unto the work to do it. Whose heart was stirred to come to the work to do it. You see, they came voluntarily. They were motivated to do something. So this wisdom wasn't merely what they had in their abilities. The wisdom also meant that they wanted to apply their talents in the service of God. And if you look very quickly, it applied not just to the people that did this. Verse 29 of Exodus 35, it emphasizes the fact that all those who contributed to the effort, who brought the items which were the metals that were melted down, the skins that were used to fabricate the covering of the tabernacle, all of these items that were brought to make this thing came out of the people's, what the people owned, what they had. What they had and what they did with it was used in the service of their God. And that was the basic meaning of the term wisdom, which is as it is used through Proverbs. What we have and what we do with it is a gift from God. The way we use our talents and what comes out from what we do should reflect the fact that we are indeed the children of God. So now, let's finish the verse that we stopped halfway through at the end of Ecclesiastes. Now let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. And the other thing that you might keep in mind is that this little word, Ecclesiastes, it means someone who addresses an audience. Everybody comes together and somebody else has the task of speaking to them, as I am speaking to you this morning. So there's an admonition there for me, isn't there, in the meaning of the word Ecclesiastes, that I should offer you some advice which is useful, some words of wisdom, and wisdom in the Old Testament sense, something which you can take home, which will build up your faith, which will help you through the days ahead, which will cause you to want to come back here again next week, and so forth. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter, says this verse at the end of Ecclesiastes. Fear God and keep his commandments. For such is the whole duty of man, is the way the phrase goes in the translation that I use. Fear God and keep his commandments. Now that's interesting, isn't it? Because so often in the Old Testament we find things are just taken for granted. And what's taken for granted there? Well, the thing that's taken for granted is that you'll know something about the commandments, what you're supposed to do. What are these commandments which you should keep? Well, interestingly, the rabbis broke these, pigeonholed everything and cut them down into little pieces and determined that there were 613 commandments in the book of Moses. Now, we don't expect everyone to remember all the 613 commandments. So it's useful then that there was a summary given to us. It's useful then that in Moses there was a summary, a preamble, as it were, to the law. And this we know as the Ten Commandments. And these Ten Commandments we can break into two sections. The first four deal with our relationship with God. Having only one God. Not considering God in a profane sense, taking the Lord's name in vain is the phrase. Setting time aside, as it was in Sabbath law, and not setting up anything, any effigies, any other things which will take God's place in our lives. The first four commandments. The last six deal with the way we relate to people. Firstly, within our family, honor thy father and thy mother. And secondly, then, to all the people that we come in contact with on a daily basis. Don't steal, don't murder, and so forth. So it's useful then to think that things were subdivided even further for us by Jesus when he was asked about the great commandment. And Jesus said, the first is that thou shalt love the Lord thy God. And the second is that you'll love your neighbor. And we see that division which we have there in the Ten Commandments, the way we relate to God, and that should influence the way we relate to people as a whole. Commandments are being broken down for us and simplified for us so that we can understand very clearly, and we don't have to remember all 613 of these commandments. We can simplify our lives and our approach as we have it here in this wisdom literature. So when you go back then to the book of Ecclesiastes, and we stop in the middle of the 9th chapter, and we read this little phrase that live joyfully with the wife of thy youth, we can see a reflection there of the commandment that deals with relation to our parents, can't we? Honor thy father and thy mother. Live joyfully with your wife. We can see that what we're being reminded of is that our relationship with people as a whole begins with the way we deal with the people that are closest to us. And then, when we come to this next verse, the verse immediately following, whatsoever thy hand findeth to do, do it with all thy might. At a practical level, we can remember the men who built the tabernacle, that they worked with all their skill and they directed their skills and everything that they had to something which emphasized their belief in their God, that showed people that they realized that they themselves were God's handiwork, that the talents they had were because God had made them. And the expression of what they did then was a reflection of the fact that God had entrusted these skills into their hands. So when we step back from a time when we have these words in the Old Testament, what does it mean for us today? Does it mean that when we find ourselves in a position in our work that we should do our best at all times? I would suggest that it does. Does it mean that we should be seen and we should leave honorable things behind us in the way we relate and the way we speak and the way places we go to? We'll come to this point again in a few moments. I would suggest that it does. So what the wisdom literature is saying to us is always we should keep in mind that we are God's children. And we should always be conscious of that. And in everything we do, we should reflect our faith, our acceptance of the presence of God in our lives, and that this should be seen. I'm going to go back now to the beginning of Proverbs. And we're going to head towards the third chapter of Proverbs. And the fourth verse. We're going to end up in Proverbs 3, verse 4. But we're going to get there by going back to the beginning of Proverbs and approach it from what we see in the first two chapters of this book. We've indicated to you already that what's meant here is that this whole book is directed to individuals. It's advice given on an individual level. It's advice which is presented to us to deal with very ordinary things. That the basic meaning of this term wisdom, which we meet so many times in Proverbs, is that we are able to do things in a competent fashion. And of course, then you take from that and extend it. And it applies not merely to the things we do with our hands, but to the things that we enact in our lives. The fear of the Lord in the 7th verse of the 1st chapter of Proverbs is the beginning of knowledge. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And as we have indicated from our consideration in Exodus, what we need to do then is take what we have learned and apply it in a positive sense, whether that's doing things with our hands or doing things with our minds. Verse 20. Verse 20 is a rather interesting little verse. It's seems to say that wisdom is crying. Wisdom is making a lot of noise in the streets. And I think that's a reasonable interpretation of what that verse says. Verse 20 of Proverbs 1. Wisdom crieth without. Outside, you can hear the cry. She utters her voice in the streets. What does it mean? Well, years ago in the 1950s, we had a lot of lecture titles from Christadelphian platforms, and they took an idea which was present in the prophets and summarized it with the phrase, "The stones cry out." And what most of those lecturing brothers emphasized when they took that title was firstly that Israel had gone back into the land, and that we could see redevelopment at all levels within Israel. And so the words of the prophets then were being emphasized in the physical things that people could see in the rebuilding of that land. The prophets then, their words rang true. But there was another thing that happened at the same time. When the Jews went back into their land, they started to dig. And archaeology of this area became very fashionable. And the point, of course, that the Jews were trying to demonstrate was that they had been there before. And sure enough, they found evidence of past Jewish history underground in the archaeological structures which they excavated. And so once again, the words of the prophets were brought to bear, that what we saw in the ground as it was dug up and what we saw in the areas that were being rebuilt vindicated the historical records in the prophets, indicated that what the prophets had said had indeed happened to that nation, and indicated also that God's purpose in bringing his people back into that land was again being demonstrated, and so the words of the prophets rang true. What we saw demonstrated what the Bible said. So what does it mean when wisdom cries out in the streets? And what we have indicated to you is that what is intended with this idea of wisdom is that it is imparted on a personal level. And once that wisdom has been imparted from our scriptures to each one of us, we need to do something with it, to develop it, to let it build within ourselves so that the things we do reflect our beliefs and our values. So is that what's meant here when wisdom cries out in the streets? That when we go out of this room, people should see us for the values that we espouse. Do we go to places that would be expected of a son of God? Do we speak with words that indicate that we do value our relationship with God? There's plenty of blasphemy out there, to give you another example. Do our actions, do the ways that we complete our tasks and the way we leave the people that we deal with, leave them in peace and without offense? Do the streets cry out for the wisdom of God because we are part of them? I'm convinced that that's what this verse means. Chapter 2, verse 6. If that's what that verse means, that our presence outside this room should demonstrate the faith that we profess inside this room, then what really is happening is that the Lord has provided that wisdom. The Lord has precipitated those actions. And the Lord has given the wisdom, and out of God's mouth comes the knowledge and the understanding which we portray in our activities. Verse 20. That you may walk in the way of good men and keep the paths of righteousness. That is the intention. That is the intention of the wisdom which we should all build into our lives. And now, let's go to the third chapter. And as we've said, we're going to head to the fourth verse. My son, chapter 3 starts, and once again, you see, it's directed very personally. It's direct talk. There's no great things that we can sit back and enjoy from a distance. It's something which is pushed at every one of us. And of course, by the using the term son, we don't necessarily mean only the boys in the room. It includes everyone. All of us are affected and should accept the words that come from the page. My son. My child. Let's read it that way. Forget not my law, but keep thine, but let thine heart keep my commandments. And as I've said, we can let our head learning run away with us, and we can worry about all of the 613 commandments in Moses, or we can realize that it boils down to two great values. One, that we should love the Lord, and that's a very positive emotion. And secondly, that we should show that we have that emotion in the way we deal with other people. As Jesus said, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. For length of days. Now, what's happening? Now, we did indicate earlier that medical science and psychiatry and so forth is giving us plenty of lessons that the conditions in the world round about are going to generate a lot of stress in people's lives, bring about a number of premature deaths and so forth, if we let them get to us. If we let them get to us. And it's hard not to. Goldman Brothers in the late 20s developed a system of speculative investment, which contributed in some large part to the decline of the stock market in 1929. That firm is still with us, as Goldman Sachs nowadays. It was bailed out by the U.S. bank, by the U.S. government quite recently because it was too big to fail. But Goldman Sachs are the people that developed this business of bundling mortgages, which was one of the large factors in precipitating the decline of the stock market recently and bringing about the decline in pension values and all the other things that people are worrying about at the moment. Now, the fascinating thing is that the Bank of Canada has Mark Carney as its head at the moment. Mark Carney, very interestingly, spent 14 years as a senior executive with Goldman Sachs. Tim Geithner, who is the principal advisor to President Obama, also spent about the same length of time as a senior executive in Goldman Sachs. So if you want something to worry about, you've got it. The people that caused the problem are still there telling us how to get out of the problem. We're not going to get away from the problems that are facing the world. So the words here are very important. Very important. There is something else that we can hold on to. Something more than worrying about whether the Canadian dollar will weather this problem. Length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. That's very different. Very different from what we read in the newspapers. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. That also is very different than what we read in the newspapers. People are losing their jobs and there's not a lot you can do about it. But for us, in our community, and with the people that we deal with, we need to indicate our faith, our realization that there is something more, and we also have to be prepared to help as necessary. Bind these things about your neck, write them upon the table of your heart, so shall you find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and of man. And there's the conclusion of the whole issue, isn't it? That was what Paul said when he spoke of the fruits of the Spirit. The things that should come out of our faith, the ways of acting that should come out as part of our faith. From such, Paul concluded, there's no law. And what Proverbs is saying is if you do take hold of the values that are in Moses and apply them in your lives, then it's not just God that will notice, but others too will realize that, and others also will benefit from it.